Sasha's voice. "Who is it?" she asked gruffly. I took a step back so she could get a good view from the peephole I knew she was looking through. "Oh, shit. It's Orlando."
"Orlando?"
I heard London ask. To say I was pissed would be an understatement. Our family was in crisis. My crazy uncle was on the loose, and here were my sister and cousin disappearing to a Florida resort like they didn't have a care in the world. "I told you we should have told someone we were coming here." "Open the damn door," I yelled, banging on it again. The door slowly opened, and Sasha stared at me, looking stupid as hell. I pushed past her and entered the room. There were two beds in the room. London was sitting in the center of one, and the other, which I assumed was Sasha's, sat empty. "The hell are you doing here?" London asked. "The question is, what the hell are you two doing here? Do you know how worried everyone is? Pop had everyone tearing apart the fucking hospital and the entire east side of New York City looking for you," I snapped. "What the fuck is wrong with y'all?"
"Calm down. Oh, I can explain," Sasha told me.
"No, I'm not gonna calm down, because our psycho uncle tried to kill my mother yesterday, and my sister, who was supposed to know better, along with my super responsible cousin, vanished into thin air without saying shit to anyone. There was no way I'm calming down." I lectured him.
"Wait, what?"
London jumped out of the bed with a sudden look of concern. "What did you just say about Mom? Uncle Larry tried to kill Aunt Chippy? Oh my God, when? Where?" Sasha stood beside London. "Is she all right?" "Oh, so now y'all interested. If you picked up the phone or answered the text, you would know what happened to Ma," I shouted.
"Orlando, is Mommy all right?"
London asked frantically. "She's home safe now. Of all people, Kenny helped her escape. But Larry is still out there looking for God knows who to do God knows what to him. Which is why when we found out that you two weren't where you're supposed to be, all hell broke loose." I shook my head at their carelessness.
"I'm sorry, O. It's all my fault."
Sasha's voice was barely above a whisper.
"It's nobody's fault. Look, we have a reason for being here. We're not just here for a getaway," London said with a sigh.
"I'm listening." I folded my arms and waited for her explanation. "We know how to find Vinny Dash," Sasha said after a few moments.
"Is he here in Florida?"
"He's supposed to be in Jacksonville today," Sasha said. "So, if Vinny Dash is here, why didn't you tell the rest of us?" I didn't know if I was more curious about their reasoning or angry at them for trying to go it alone. When it came to issues that affected the whole family, we never condoned this kind of lone wolf shit. It was too risky.
"Because we don't know exactly where," Sasha explained. "Just that he's going to be at a marina in Jacksonville."
"Damn it, Sasha! Do you know how many marinas there are in Jacksonville?" I sat on the side of the bed, overwhelmed by everything, began to rub my temples. "I need to call Vegas so he and Daryl can handle this."
"The hell you are! We were on this mission way before you got here. We were the ones who got the info from Jamaica John," London snapped at me.
"Well, technically we got it from his phone," Sasha shrugged.
"And I'm sorry, but if you think for a second you're about to stop me from finding that bastard, you're crazy. He killed my mother, or did you forget about that?
And he tried to kill my mother and my husband," London added. Now I understood why they had gone off half-cocked on this mission. They saw themselves as vigilantes for justice. People they loved had been hurt, and they wanted to be the ones to get revenge. The problem was, this was not a game or a movie. This was real life, with dangerous people. And they should have waited for help from the family.
"I tell you what, why don't y'all tell it to Mom and Pop?"
I pulled out my cell phone, pushed a button to dial, then set it on speaker so they could both hear it ring. Sasha didn't move, but London jumped, grabbing the phone and hanging it up. We all looked at one another, at a silent impasse for a minute. Finally, Sasha said,
"Orlando, sometimes it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. We knew what we were doing. We also knew that nobody would let us do it if we asked." She put two fingers together. "We are this close to finding Vinny and quite possibly your son. We waste time trying to convince Uncle Elsie and Aunt Chippy, and Vinny will be in the wind. Now, you got a whole team with you. Let's not waste time arguing. Let's go find that son of a bitch. As crazy as it sounded, Sasha made a lot of sense. And if she was right that Vinny was nearby, that could mean my son was, too. I didn't want to waste another second.
Ruby, 66. I sat on the balcony of our new yacht enjoying the view. The water was calming, the sky was magnificent, and the air was just as perfect as the boat we were on. Surprisingly, it had been a peaceful past couple of days. Despite being spontaneously uprooted from his home once again, my son was fascinated by the floating mini-mansion that was our temporary home. The 63-foot Benetti yacht had 3 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, and a crew cabin, as well as plenty of open space for him to play. It had taken Blake bribing him with a trip to Gator World to get him off the boat. Seeing my son's enjoyment also helped me be a little more accepting of our living situation. My initial frustration with Vinny putting us into this predicament once again was starting to slowly subside. There was also his promise that once he made this final transaction and sold the remaining dope, guaranteed to bring him another $1 million, he would be out of the drug game for good. The anticipation of our being able to live a somewhat normal life gave me a little hope. I was starting to relax and had even made love to my husband, something we hadn't done in over a week. After, as we lay in bed, we talked about our future and where we would live. Vinny suggested Europe, far from the Duncans, the Asians, and anyone else who might have brought harm to our family. His excitement was infectious, and I allowed myself to feel some of the happiness that I could see he felt. I quelled the suspicions I had about Vinny's involvement with my brother's death and told myself that I had to stop looking for answers that maybe I didn't need to know. I fell asleep in his arms, and for the first time in almost a year, I didn't dream of Orlando. My cell phone rang, and Blake's name appeared. I quickly answered it, knowing he was probably calling because Vincent wanted to speak with me. "Hello? Ruby? Can with go?" Blake was incoherent. "Blake? What you saying? I can't understand." "Ruby." I looked at my phone and saw that my signal was weak. "Blake? I can't hear ya. Wait." The call ended. I walked along the deck with my phone in the air trying to get a stronger signal. As I made my way to the stern, the small bars in the corner of the screen slowly increased until they indicated a strong signal. I dialed Blake's number, and as it began to ring, I looked at the dock and spotted Vinny heading toward the boat carrying a large satchel. He waved at me and I waved back.
"Ruby,"
Blake finally answered. "Blake, can you hear me?" I asked.
"Yes, I can. Me need Faya to listen to me."
His voice was very serious and I knew something was wrong. "Blake, what's wrong? Is Vincent okay?" My thoughts went to my son.
"He's fine, Ruby, but I talk with the man I told you about. You gotta get off that boat. It's not safe. I got a car for us. We got to leave now while he's gone," Blake told me.
"Blake?" My eyes closed and I struggled to catch my breath. I knew before he said it, and my heart sank.
"Did he?" "Yes, Ruby. He killed your brother. He paid a man to blow the house up. You got to leave. I'm on the way. Meet me at the marina parking lot in 5 minutes. I'll be in a green car."
The call ended, and I turned to leave. I had barely made it 3 feet when suddenly I heard Vinny's voice behind me.
"Well, my love, the deal is done, and we are $1 million richer."
A chill went down my spine as I felt his arm on my shoulder. I turned and faced him. He stood smiling, holding the satchel like a newborn baby.
"That's good, Vinny," I said nervously.
"Is that all you're gonna say? That's good, Vinny? Ruby, this is what we've been working for. We finally got enough money to travel the world and be happy.
He pulled me close and kissed me, but I couldn't bring myself to kiss him back. He placed his hand on my stomach and whispered,
"We can have a baby. My baby. I can be a dad."
He wanted me to have his baby. The man who killed my brother wanted me to make him a father. My husband. The man I married. My brother's murderer. I needed to get away. I looked over Vinny's shoulder in search of Blake and Vincent, who were going to be waiting for me.
"Ruby? What's wrong?"
I ignored him as I continued staring toward the parking lot, searching for the car Blake said he would be driving, but I didn't see them. I knew I had to leave now. Vinny turned to see what I was looking at.
"Fuck!"
he said through clenched teeth. I took a step back from him, trying to figure out how I was going to get away. Vinny grabbed my arm and said,
"What the fuck are they doing here?"
"What? Who?"
I was confused by what he was asking.
"Don't play stupid, Ruby." "Shit. Fucking Larry must have told them where we were."
"Who you talking about?"
I shook my head. My mind was a whirlwind. Vinny was acting erratic and I hadn't even tried to leave. I looked in the direction where he was pointing. There, in plain view, I saw a woman and two men in the distance. Just when I thought things couldn't get any worse, they did. It was my son's father.
"The fucking Duncans, that's who. We gotta get out of here."
Vinny grabbed me and pulled me across the deck toward the stairs leading to the staterooms.
"Vinny!"
I yelled, both from panic and the pain of his grip on my arm.
"Come on, I don't think they saw us,"
he said, then yelled to the captain.
"Start this motherfucker up! We're leaving now!"
Kenny, 67. The bus ride home to Georgia was the longest ride of my life. I was paranoid at every stop we made, expecting my father or brother to be waiting for me. When we finally made it to Waycross, I was the last person to get off the bus. I stepped onto the platform and looked around, making sure it was safe. I didn't have any bags with me. All my belongings were still in New York because there was no way I was going back inside the safe house to get them. I was never going back to that house again. I caught a cab to the farm, and when I arrived, my mother was sitting in the living room watching television.
"Hey, Ma," I said.
"Kenny." "You startled me, boy." She jumped off the sofa and rushed over to hug me. Then, glancing over my shoulder, she asked, "Where's your brother?" "He's still with him, Mama." My mother put her hands on my shoulders.
"What happened?"
We went over to the couch and I sat beside her. I didn't waste any time getting to the heart of my story. "He's always been crazy, but now he's dangerous. He's a maniac, Mama. He's killing people for no reason. He killed Aunt Donna, he caused Harris's accident, and then he tried to kill Aunt Chippy." My mother gasped.
"My God! Is she okay?"
"She's alive," I told her. "Mama, we had a fight, and he was about to kill me. Curtis had to stop him."
"Oh, baby, I'm so sorry."
She pulled me in for another hug.
"I hate him. I swear to God, I hate him. I should have known when he first got home and started talking all this stuff about Uncle L.C. that something was wrong. And don't get me started about his constant conversations with Grandma Betty."
I stood up and looked out the window into the backyard. I should have killed him myself. My mother came and stood beside me.
"Kenny, don't say that. You don't mean it."
"I do mean it. He's out of control. And now he's got Curtis with him out there somewhere."
"Come on, let's go."
She took me by the arm. "Mama, where are we going? I'm tired and I need to take a shower. I've been on a bus for 2 days. I can't go anywhere like this." I motioned at the dingy clothes I was wearing.
"You're fine. Where we're going, it doesn't matter what you got on."
She pulled me out the front door. "Why are we here?" I asked 5 minutes later when we walked up to the small family plot.
"Because we need to talk, and I need to explain some things to you," she said, stepping carefully through the graves.
"We could have talked at the house, Mama," I said, but she kept moving. I followed her until we arrived at a gated area. She opened the rusted fence that enclosed a large mausoleum with the name Duncan on the outside. I paused before entering. In all the years I'd lived on the farm, we almost never visited my grandmother's grave. It was just too painful for my parents, even after Dad was sent away. "Come on," she motioned, and I entered with her. "Let me explain something about your father, Kenny." "There's no explanation for him other than he's crazy. Isn't that what they've always called him, Crazy Larry?" She shot me a sideways glance. As bad as he was, my mother had never wavered in her love for him. Then she launched into a story that blew my mind. "Listen, your father was an intriguing man who served his country in Vietnam. But when he came back, he was very damaged, like a lot of men. He's always been smart, like his father was before him and like his brothers. All Duncan men are, including you." Her hand covered mine. "But he's always had a fascination with guns. Over the years, his fascination grew. He was always buying and collecting them. They became his hobby, his passion, I guess. The only person who loved guns as much as he did was Grandma Betty. They would sit around and talk about and compare guns all the time. That was their bond. Well, one day, the two of them were in the living room, and he was cleaning one of his guns. Curtis was in there with them. Then, the unthinkable happened. The gun went off, hitting Grandma Betty in the chest and killing her instantly." "What?" I turned and stared at her in disbelief. "Pops killed Grandma Betty?" "No, Kenny." She released a big sigh. "Curtis shot and killed Betty. It was horrible. I was pregnant with you at the time. Your father took the blame for it because he didn't want anything to happen to your brother. It was natural for everyone to assume that he did it. After all, just like you said, he is Crazy Larry. But after that happened, his life took a very tragic turn. All of our lives did, actually. Your father became very paranoid and thought that everyone was out to get him, especially his brothers. I guess it was guilt, but Betty's death triggered something. Then, hiding the fact that his son shot and killed his mother, along with the demons he carried from Vietnam, caused him to suffer a psychotic break. He became very violent, assaulting people, destroying property, and then he would say that Miss Betty told him that people were plotting on him and that's why he had to do it. He got worse and killed a dozen innocent men. In order to keep him from going to jail, Elsie, Lou, and I decided it was better to have him locked up somewhere he could get treatment." Her eyes misted over with tears. "It was one of the hardest decisions we had to make. He was the love of my life, and he took care of his brothers after their father died and Miss Betty went to prison. We all loved Larry, but we were forced to make a decision, prison or the mental hospital, and we chose what we thought was the lesser of two evils." I sat and listened to my mother reveal things about my father and brother that I would have never thought possible. The bond between the two of them had always been strong for as far back as I could remember, and I never understood, because for most of our lives, my dad was locked away. Now it made sense. I felt some sympathy for both of them. I couldn't imagine the guilt of killing my grandmother, even if it was an accident. Then all the horrible things that I'd been a part of over the past few weeks came rushing back, and I was angry all over again. "You all made the wrong choice," I snapped, "because now he's out and back to his old ways. So, it's your fault that all of this is happening." Tears fell from her eyes, and although I knew my statement was hurtful, I didn't care because it was the truth. "What are we going to do?" she cried. "The only thing we can do, Mama, we kill him." She opened her mouth, but nothing came out as she nodded in agreement.
Orlando, 68. We walked along the marina of the Julington Creek Pier, where numerous yachts were docked. This was the sixth marina we'd been to this morning, and we had no idea what we were looking for. I was sure Vinny Dash would be just as flashy with whatever boat he was in as that damn yellow Lamborghini he drove, but there were so many luxury yachts around here,
There was no telling if one of them was his. It was a gorgeous day, so there was a crowd of people on the pier enjoying the weather. I scanned faces in the crowd, but none looked familiar. We don't even know if we're looking for a tugboat or a tanker. It's a lot of boats out here, Sasha said. Trust me, it's Vinny Dash. He's going to be in a nice boat, I told her. Hell, it's a lot of nice boats out here. It's Florida, she sighed. We continued walking a little farther, and then she stopped. Where the hell is London? I turned around and spotted London not too far behind us, looking back toward the street. We walked over to her. What's going on? You see Vinny? I asked. No, not Vinny, but look over there. She motioned her head in the direction she was looking. Who? Sasha stood on the other side of her. That guy over there with the long dreads. I put my hand over my eyes to shield them from the sun, and I spotted the guy she was talking about. Sasha did too. The old guy with the kid? Sasha asked. Yeah. London began walking toward them and we followed. Orlando, look at that little boy. Oh my God. As we got closer, I focused on the little boy's face. Something inside of me leapt. Does he look like anyone to you? London glanced at me. That big ass head should look real familiar, Sasha laughed. We stopped and waited, trying to look nonchalant as the man and the little boy came near. I couldn't stop staring at my son, who was happily eating an ice cream cone and talking to the man. London smiled at him. Hello there, she said. That ice cream looks good. He smiled back at her and said, it is good. Blake bought it for me. Sasha stepped closer to the dread-headed man and opened her jacket slightly so he could see the handle of her gun and understand that now was not the time to make any stupid moves. I kneeled down and looked at my son's face, almost choking up with emotion. What's your name? He grinned at me and said, Vincent. That's a cool name, Vincent. Where you from? I forced myself to stuff down any anger I felt at the fact that Ruby had named him after one of my family's enemies. I used to live in Jamaica, but now me, my mommy, daddy, and Blake live on a boat. He licked the ice cream. My cousin and sister were right. He did have my big head. He had his mother's eyes and dimpled smile, but he also had my complexion. He was beautiful. And it took everything within me not to grab him in my arms and hug him tightly. Oh, really? Which boat do you all live on? London asked. Come on, I'll show you. He grabbed her by the hand and pulled her toward the pier. Blake looked at the three of us. I could see him trying to decide on his next move. It's cool, man. We ain't gonna hurt you or Vincent, I whispered to him. Just relax. He chuckled. Why would a man come all this way to hurt his son? I was a little surprised by how quickly he'd put the pieces together, but even more surprised that he almost sounded supportive. I nodded, and we followed Vincent and London. Which boat, Vincent? London asked when he stopped. That one. Vincent pointed and then frowned. But, wait, Vincent. Are you pointing at that boat down there? I picked him up so I could be sure which one he meant. He nodded, and I put him back on the ground, then turned and asked Blake, is he talking about that boat that's pulling off? Blake looked at me, almost apologetically, and said, yes, that's the boat, Mr. Orlando.
LC 69. The car ride from Brunswick Airport to Waycross was mostly quiet. Initially, I had told Chippy to stay home where she would be safe, especially in light of what had just happened with Larry. But my wife was headstrong. Despite the fact that an attempt was just made on her life, she insisted on traveling with us. After a nonstop flight to Atlanta, she and I, along with Junior, Paris, Vegas, and Daryl, headed with our security detail to the farm in search of my brother. Are you okay? I looked over at her.
I'm fine.
She gave my hand a reassuring squeeze, then turned to look out the window.
It's been so long since we've been here. I'm just trying to take it all in, I guess.
Still looks the same to me, I said, staring at the familiar sights as we drove through my hometown. Willie, turn down the next street.
Yes, sir.
Willie, our driver, nodded at me in the rearview mirror. A little farther down the road, I instructed him to stop at a gas station. Willie pulled the SUV into the parking lot, and I rolled down the window and stared at the building. The same Pepsi sign still hung over the entrance. The feelings of nostalgia overwhelmed me as I recalled the day my brothers had given me this gas station, where I had worked for years while I attended college as a graduation gift. The love and bond shared between the Duncan men had been unbreakable back then. I never would have dreamed our lives would be as they were now.
This is where it all started,
Chippy said with a sigh. That was a long time ago, I said, forcing my thoughts back to the present. I rolled the window back up, took one last look, and then directed Willie to our next destination. I sat back and closed my eyes in an effort to prepare myself for whatever was waiting for me when I got there. I could feel the vibration of the truck increase, indicating that we were no longer on concrete, but the winding dirt road that led to the Duncan farm. I looked over at Chippy and saw that she was staring at me.
Are you sure about this, Elsie?
She asked with a worried look. I'm sure. Don't worry. I pulled her to me and kissed the top of her head. I need you to stay in the car while we do this.
What? You're kidding, right?
She sat up and looked at me like I was crazy. Chippy, I told you, the only way you could come was if you promised to stay safe. That means in the car with Willie. I caught Willie's eye in the rearview mirror, and again he nodded. Chippy opened her mouth to protest, but I shook my head. Do not get out of this car, Chippy. I mean it. My phone rang, and I saw that it was Vegas calling from the car behind us.
What's the plan, Pop?
He asked when I answered. Have the men surround the house. I want someone at every door, I told him. Vegas gave the orders, and when we parked, I watched as 8 men climbed out of separate SUVs, guns drawn, and approached the farmhouse. The front door opened, and Nene walked onto the porch. I kissed Chippy again, then opened the door and stepped out. My sons and daughter were by my side. I looked at them and instructed, "Hold tight."
"Are you sure, Daddy?"
Paris asked, her eyes locked on her aunt. "Yes."
"Elsie, what the hell is going on? What are you doing here?"
Nene yelled. "You know why I'm here. I'm looking for Larry."
"Larry ain't here,"
she said with a frown.
"I ain't got nothing to do with this mess y'all got going on. You can take your goons and get off my property." "What's wrong, Ma?"
Kenny stepped onto the porch, and I saw the gun in his hand. I just hoped Vegas could keep Paris under control. "I talked to him, Nee. He's around." I stepped onto the porch, warily, keeping an eye on Kenny's weapon. For now, he was holding it loosely by his side. "How you doing, Kenny?"
"I'm all right, Uncle Elsie,"
Kenny said.
"I mean it, Elsie. You can go,"
Nene told me.
"I don't want no trouble."
I could see that she was telling the truth, but also knew she would side with her own family first. So I had to figure out where Kenny stood. From what I knew, he had helped Chippy escape, so there was a good chance I could keep things peaceful with him. For now. As long as he didn't feel threatened, things didn't have to escalate between him and us. I turned to Kenny and said, "You talk to your daddy? Do you know where he is?" "No, sir, I don't. I haven't talked to him since..." His voice drifted off. Then he looked at me, sadly, and offered some form of an apology. "I didn't know that's what he was gonna do. He's out of control." "I know. That's why I'm here. Time to put an end to this." I placed my hand on his shoulder. "And I appreciate what you did for your Aunt Chippy. You saved her life. But I need to talk to your mama for a little while." Kenny looked at his mother and she told him, "Go on inside, I'm fine." When he went in, she took a deep breath and shook her head. "Betty Duncan is probably rolling over in her grave right now because of y'all. She ain't raised y'all to be like this." "You're right. She probably is. Let's go see her," I suggested. We walked down the steps of the house, passing one of the security guards who hadn't left his post. Of course, Chippy hopped out of the car and caught up to us. When I saw the way she and Nene hugged each other tight, I knew I couldn't send Chippy back to the car. These were two mothers who wanted nothing more than for their children to be safe.
"I am so sorry about what happened to you, Chippy," Nene said. "I know, Nee. Now let's fix this," Chippy said, taking her hand as we walked down a long path to the cemetery.
The three of us were mostly silent until finally we arrived at the place where my mother and father were laid to rest. We took a seat on a tiny bench in front of the plaques with their names.
"What happened to you boys, L.C.?"
Nene asked.
"Y'all were so close. You used to look out and take care of each other."
"I don't know what happened," I sighed.
"You want to hear something crazy?"
Nene said. "What's that?" I reached in my pocket and pulled out a handkerchief to dust off my father's plaque.
"I always thought it was the money."
"The money?" I repeated.
"Yeah. I mean, you boys always worked hard and made a good living, but when that money started flowing like water, that's when things in the family began to change. Remember when you and Chippy first moved to Atlanta, and then y'all moved all of us with you? Then we all moved to New York. We all got a taste of the good life and the power."
"That's true," Chippy said. "But I don't think that's what it was. The money had nothing to do with it. Things didn't really get bad until Levi..."
Just then, my cell began to ring with my wife's ringtone. Chippy and I exchanged a knowing look. Larry had her phone.
"Hold on a minute, Nee.
I think this is your husband."
"Hello,"
I answered.
"I see you made it into town, L.C.,"
Larry said, throwing me off guard. I looked over my shoulder, half expecting to see him standing behind me.
"I did." "Where are you, Larry?"
"Waiting to meet you. Let's sit down and have a drink."
"When and where?"
"Right now. And how about Big Shirley's? For old time's sake," he said.
"I'm on my way."
I hung up the phone.
"Elsie, you can't go meet with him. You know Larry as well as I do. It's probably a trap,"
Nene said nervously.
"I ain't worried. Truth is, it's probably more dangerous for him than me," I told her.
This was one of the reasons I had brought a security detail with us.
"Elsie, are you sure you should..."
Chippy started, but I cut her off. "I love you, Chippy, but you know this has to be done. I told you that if you couldn't handle it, you should stay home, remember? I stated firmly. She rolled her eyes at me, but stayed silent. We would probably fight about this later, but as head of the family, I had to take charge and take care of Larry once and for all. It was something I should have done as soon as I knew he was released from the mental hospital.
You want me to go with you?
Nene offered. No, sister-in-law. If you want to do something, why don't you take my wife and make her some tea? I said. I gotta be going. Nene tried one last time.
Elsie, I don't know about you going to meet him. You know what's gonna happen, don't you?
I do. I'm wise enough to know that this is one meeting one of us ain't gonna survive. I gave her a hug and kissed my wife goodbye.
Ruby, 70. As the boat pulled away from the dock, I could no longer breathe, because I'd spent every inch of air in my lungs to scream. My heart pounded in my chest as I fought to get away from Vinny, who held me tight against him.
Vinny, we have to go back and get Vincent!
Tears streamed down my face. I looked back at the view of the marina becoming smaller, as our captain slowly maneuvered around the other boats in the harbor. We were still close enough to go back, but I had to act fast before we got much farther. Adrenaline kicked in and my body went into fight-or-flight mode. I somehow became strong enough to finally push Vinny away from me and escape his grasp.
You bastard! My son is back there! We have to go back!
We ain't going back nowhere!
Then he went to grab me again, but I moved just in time, putting a few feet between us. I stared at him, breathing heavily.
We can't leave him, Vinny. Please, please, Vinny.
Ruby, I know you saw him. I know you saw Orlando. He's here to kill me. Do you want me dead? Is that what you want?
He bellowed as he took a step toward me.
I want my son. That is what I want, Vinny.
You really want them to kill me?
Isn't that what you did to my brother?
Without thinking, I charged at him, clawing at his face and screaming through my tears.
I know you did it! You killed Randy!
Vinny grabbed my arms and tossed me to the ground, slapping me across the face. I struggled to get up, but he straddled me.
Yes, I killed him. Are you happy now? He's dead, and I'm sorry it had to be done. But I've been a good husband and father, haven't I? I've given you the best of everything, and this is the thanks I get. You're an ungrateful bitch, Ruby.
Get off me, I gasped for air. I must get my son.
Fuck your son. He's with his real father now anyway, isn't he? Orlando Duncan, the man you dream about. I've heard you cry out his name in your sleep more than once. You're still in love with him.
Vinny's face was red, and his chest heaved as he raged on in a combination of anger and hurt.
You never loved me.
Vinny, let me go,
I pleaded, and then began struggling again. Suddenly, he pulled out a gun and placed it against my temple.
You said you loved me, Ruby.
Vinny, please, no.
If I can't have you, neither will he. I wish your son's father was here to see this,
he said with an evil laugh. I closed my eyes and prepared to die.
Her son's father is here, motherfucker.
I looked over to see Orlando standing on the deck soaking wet a few feet away from us. Vinny turned to look at him, but before he could even react to the sight, two shots rang out. I screamed as Vinny's body fell on top of me. A slight gurgle escaped his mouth as he took his final breath. I lay beneath Vinny, terrified that Orlando was coming for me next. I was trembling as Orlando shoved Vinny's body off me. But then, instead of raising his weapon to me, he reached for my hand.
I hesitated at first, then allowed him to help me to my feet.
How?
I asked. It cost me $500, but I rented a guy's jet ski and caught up with the boat, he explained. If you got out of the harbor, I might not have gotten to you in time.
Orlando, I'm so sorry. I thought when my brother, Randy...
He put up a hand to stop me. Not now, Ruby. We have a lot to talk about when the time is right, but for now, we have one very confused son waiting for you at the marina. He put his arm around me, and we stepped over Vinny's body as we headed up to the control station to tell the captain to turn the boat around.
LC, 71. I sat in the back of Big Shirley's, nursing a beer and trying to be as inconspicuous as possible while I waited for Larry to arrive. Really, no one was paying me much attention. Most of the patrons were too busy focusing on the curvaceous stripper doing tricks with a beer bottle on a makeshift stage. The ones who weren't being entertained by her ability were haggling with other dancers over what services they could provide and at what price. One or two people had given me a second glance, suggesting my face might have looked slightly familiar to them, but I'd been away long enough that no one recognized me as a family member of the owners. Same for Vegas, who hadn't even been born when Chippy and I moved away from Waycross. He was sitting at a table near the front door, and Daryl was at the bar, both in positions where they could keep an eye on me and my seat. Junior stood behind me, and we had a few other security men in place, along with Paris and her team surrounding the building so no one could get in or out without our knowledge. I had been glancing at the front door in anticipation of his arrival for more than 20 minutes, and still, Larry hadn't come in.
Pop, I don't like this waiting game. Maybe we should get out of here,
Junior said over my shoulder. I shook my head. Not yet. He's just trying to demonstrate that he has control. If we leave now, then he knows he's gotten under my skin. We need to stick around and finish this. I took another sip of the now warm beer and looked at the front door.
Hello, Elsie. I hope I ain't keep you waiting long.
Larry's voice came from my left. He must have come from another room. Maybe he'd been in the building the whole time. Vegas and Daryl sat up a little straighter, but stayed at their posts. He sat in the chair across from me. I hadn't seen him since the day I was shot. My memory of that night was still hazy, but I didn't remember my brother ever looking so menacing. He was dressed as he normally was, in a suit, and carrying a briefcase which I was sure had some type of weapon in it. It was bittersweet to realize that out of all of us, me, Lou, Larry, and Levi, he was the one who looked most like our mother. Nene was right. Mama would have hated to know that her sons had become enemies. Larry? I nodded. He shot a glance at Junior.
So we need a babysitter to talk now. I thought this was between you and me.
I turned Junior and said, wait over at the bar.
But Pop, please,
Junior. Let me talk to my brother alone. He reluctantly walked over to the bar.
Damn, Elsie, that's one big motherfucker you got there. Reminds me of a smart Levi,
he said, chuckling. Then he leaned forward and asked,
so, how's Chippy?
He was goading me, but I was not going to give him the satisfaction of reacting. Look, Larry, this has got to stop. You said you wanted to talk, so talk. What the hell is it that you want? The smile had left his face.
You know what the fuck I want.
I want what's mine. I want my fucking company back. No, what I want is my life back that you stole away from me, but I realized on the drive from New York that it's too late for that.
I didn't steal anything from you, Larry. I have told you that over and over again, and I damn sure didn't take your life. Hell, I saved it. Fuck you, LC, he spat. Is that what you've told yourself all these years to ease your fucking guilt? Yeah, you and Lou stole my money, my company, and had me locked away to save me? Is that what you're trying to tell me? Suddenly, he laughed so hard that he started coughing. I looked over to make sure Vegas, Daryl, Jr., and the other security men were on standby. Larry, this ain't got shit to do with money. I know you got plenty of cash because you've been buying dope and giving it away like candy on Halloween. But if it's money you want, then how much? I stared at him.
I don't want money. I want Duncan Motors, he said.
Duncan Motors? I almost laughed my damn self. I'm not giving you Duncan Motors. It belongs to my kids and grandchildren.
What about my children? What about my boys?
When was the last time you looked in the trust?
The what?
He asked. Your family trust, I told him. When you sold your share of the businesses, Nene had the money put into a trust for you, her, and the boys. There's probably $15 million in it right now. He frowned. You are such a liar. And even if that was true, why would she be staying in that raggedy old house? Because she loves that farm and she knows you love it too. I sighed. Nene never needed all the glamour and glitz, Larry. All she ever needed was you. He sat there quietly for a minute, and I thought he might be contemplating what I'd said. I hoped he was realizing the truth in my words. But then, looked to his left and spoke. I know he's lying, Mama. He could always spin a tale, couldn't he? Larry raised an eyebrow as he listened to whatever the imaginary person said back to him. And then he turned to me and threatened.
I want Duncan Motors. And if I don't get it, I'm gonna make your life and the life of everyone associated with you miserable by killing them off one by one.
Look down, Larry, I said, pointing to his chest and shaking my head. Larry dropped his head a little and saw the small red dots that were now glowing, indicating where the bullets would enter his body if the triggers were pulled. I've got at least 10 guns on you right now. He looked back up at me with a smirk on his face.
Now, Elsie, you really didn't think it was gonna be this easy, did you?
It's as easy as you doing what I tell you to do, Larry, I told him. Or you die. Simple as that.
Go ahead. Give him the signal to shoot me.
He reached down nonchalantly and picked up the briefcase he'd brought, calmly placing it on the table.
The minute Curtis hears a shot, he's gonna blow this fucking place to smithereens.
Curtis, 72. I sat at a table in the back of the chicken shack and waited anxiously. Closing time for the restaurant was hours ago, so it was completely dark. The only sound in the place was the humming of the air conditioning, which wasn't loud enough to drown out the music from across the street. I stared at the linoleum floors, inhaling the scent of fried chicken, which caused my stomach to growl. I hadn't even realized I was hungry until then, but I was too nervous to eat anyway. I stared at the two-way radio in my hand, waiting and praying. Take this radio and wait across the street in your mama's place, my father had told me as we sat in the parking lot of a Big Shirley's. You listen while I'm talking to LC, and when you hear the code word, you hit the button. You understand? I don't know about this, Pop. He glared at me. Ain't nothing confusing about what I just told you to do. What the fuck is the problem? I tried to formulate the numerous thoughts in my head into coherent sentences, but I couldn't. I didn't know how to tell him that I didn't want to be a part of his suicide mission that would result in not only his death, but the deaths of my uncle, cousins, and plenty of other innocent people who didn't even know their lives were in danger. "Look at me, Curtis," he said. I turned and looked at him. "This ain't the time for you to punk out on me. Your brother done already did that. Now is the time to man the fuck up. You've always been the strong one in the family. Hell, even stronger than me. And besides, if LC cooperates and does what the hell I tell him to do, I won't even have to say the code word, okay? I just need you to be ready, just in case. But Pop, what if he doesn't cooperate? You know what you asking me to do? I tried to get him to see my point of view and the reason behind my hesitation. I know, but it can't be no worse than what they will do to me if you don't, son. You know what they say, death before dishonor. Now come on. We both got to get in position before LC and his boys get here. He yelled the small walkie-talkie out, and I took it. We got out of the Explorer, and he reached into the back and took out the brown leather briefcase. You remember the code word, right? He asked. Yeah, I remember, I nodded. He gave me one last look and said, I love you, Curtis. I grabbed him and held him tight. I love you too, Dad. He headed inside Big Shirley's through the back while I broke into the restaurant owned by my mother. Give me a bourbon. My father's voice came blasting through the small speaker in my hand, and I jumped. I turned the volume down low, and then, unable to sit any longer, I stood up and began pacing around the small dining area. A part of me wanted to just walk away from everything the way Kenny had, but I couldn't. I didn't want to abandon my father. He had been let down by too many people once his mental illness got worse, which, if I had to be honest with myself, started happening after Grandma Betty died. And Grandma wouldn't have died if I hadn't picked up that gun. My father had taken the blame for me, and now I had to be strong for him, the way he expected me to be, the way he raised me. I owed everything to my dad. Sweat began forming on my brow, and I picked up a napkin and wiped it. What are you doing here, Curtis? The voice startled me, and I spun around, standing at the entrance of the kitchen were my mother and brother. Mama, what? How? Boy, this is the 21st century. Don't you think I have cameras and a security system in place that lets me know when someone is in here? She walked toward me. What are you doing? Nothing. The walkie-talkie crackled and Pop's muffled voice came through the speaker. What the hell is that? Kenny rushed over and tried to snatch the radio, but I moved away from him. Curtis, what is going on? My mother asked. He's meeting with Uncle LC and I'm listening, that's all, I told her. Why are you listening? What is he about to do? Kenny sounded angry. I know him. If you're here, he's about to do something real sneaky. Curtis, listen to me. Whatever your father has you doing, you have to stop. My mother put her hands on each side of my face and stared me in the eye. You have to. I looked at her and didn't fight the tears that formed. I have to. I'm the only person he has. I'm all he has left. Baby, you're not. He still has family, she said. His family put him away all those years ago. They locked him away. And it's all my fault, I cried. It's not your fault, Kurt. It was an accident. Kenny came and put his arm around my shoulder. You! I shook my head and pushed his arm off me. You don't know what I'm talking about. Kenny didn't leave my side. Mom told me everything. I know what happened. It was an accident. It wasn't your fault. Your father is sick, Curtis, and that has nothing to do with you. He is a sick man, and he needs help, but not the help that he's asking from you. The speaker crackled again, and this time my father's voice was clear. Maybe not all of them, but I see two key figures, Vegas and Junior, in this room. Throw in your death, and Chippy and cancel Christmas. I have to do it. I said to my mother and brother, reaching into my pocket and taking out the phone my father had given me. Baby, please don't do this. You can't, my mother pleaded. You heard what the fuck I said, LC. You can cancel Christmas, Pop repeated. I looked down at the phone in my shaking hand.
Larry, 73. Now, LC, let me tell you how things are gonna go down. Because if you don't, no one in this motherfucker will live to tell about it. I laughed, looking down at the red dots on my chest. with Vegas and Junior less than 30 feet away, and half the patrons being LC's men, I had him right where I wanted him. Yes, it was pretty much a suicide mission from this point on, but maybe, as the Klingons on Star Trek used to say, today is a good day to die. I'd never been afraid of dying. Hell, after Vietnam, there wasn't much that could scare me. My only fear was not being able to leave my boys their proper legacy. But with LC and his brats gone, all Curtis would have to do was get his brother back on board. I was confident that the two of them could finish off whoever was left of LC's brood and start their own empire. I'd already given Curtis the locations of my last few stashes, and with the 400 kilos we got from Vinny, they'd be off and running. Larry, there are innocent people in here. This is between you and me. Let them out, LC said. Just like always, he was trying to tell me what to do, but fuck him. Those days were over. You're not worried about these people. You're worried about your boys and maybe a few of your men. I glanced over at the front door and the bar. He tried a different approach, since ordering me around wasn't working. So, what do you want? What's going to resolve this? I shrugged. Truth is, I think we're past resolution, I said as sincerely as possible. You know your wife made a statement the other day that really stuck with me. She said that our kids and grandkids were going to be fighting like the Hatfields and McCoys. And that really bothered me. Bothers me too, he said. Yeah, but probably not for the same reasons. I sat back in my seat. You see, you have 6 kids, plus Lou's daughter, and a few grands. And me? Well, I only have my 2 boys. I could see the old wheels turning in his head as he tried to figure out where I was going with this. You know I never ran from a fight, and neither have my boys. But these odds just aren't in their favor, so I decided to even the odds. What are you saying, Larry? That you're going to kill my children? I'm never going to let you do that. Maybe not all of them. But I see 2 key figures, Vegas and Junior, in this room. Throw in your death, and Chippy can cancel Christmas. I emphasized the last 2 words and then held my breath in anticipation. Nothing happened. Didn't you tell that boy the code word was Christmas? Mama yelled in my ear. Yes, Mama. Then why the hell are we still here? I don't know, I replied as I felt my anxiety rising. Something wasn't right. This wasn't the way Curtis and I had planned it. What did you say? Elsie asked. You heard what the fuck I said, Elsie. You can cancel Christmas. This time I yelled it, and Elsie's brats and a few others stood from their seats. Hold off, Elsie said to his men. They stayed where they were, but didn't sit back down. I could see Junior flexing his muscles like he wanted to jump across the table to strangle me, but he, too, followed Elsie's orders. His family revered him. I'd give them that. A few of the regulars, who weren't interested in sticking around for a fight, started heading for the door. The dancer who'd been on stage grabbed her tips off the floor and headed to the back, and the bartender turned up the house lights. Between the sudden commotion around me, the bright lights, and the fact that my plan was backfiring, I was confused for a minute. Elsie sat and stared at me while I pulled my thoughts together to figure out my next move. Finally, I pounded my fist on the table and shouted, "Damn it, Curtis! Stop being a damn coward and make the call!" I took hold of the lapel of my shirt and yelled directly into the microphone attached there, "Cancel Christmas!" I stared at the briefcase waiting. "Larry." I looked up, and there was my wife. My boys were standing on either side of her. "Time to stop this, Larry." "What the hell is she doing here?" Mama shouted. "I don't know," I said, looking past Nini to Curtis. "Curtis, where is that phone I gave you?"
"You mean this?"
Nini held up the phone that Vinny had given me. "Nee, I'm going to need you to give that to me, honey. and you and the boys need to get out of here. I stuck out my hand, but she took a step backward.
Elsie, get everyone out of here, please,
she said to my brother. He didn't hesitate, jumping up from his seat and rushing his people and any remaining bystanders out the front.
Come on, everybody out. There's a bomb in here, Elsie shouted.